This is In the Spotlight, where we shine a light on college students, our lived experiences, and the research to help us thrive. We're coming to you from the Clemson Honors College as part of CCARE, a special research group in the Creative Inquiry Program. Hey, I'm Owen, and I'm a sophomore history and economics major.
Hi, I'm Dina, a sophomore biochem and genetics major with an ASL minor.
Hey everyone, I'm Christian, and I'm a junior computer science major.
Hey everyone, I'm Nathan. I'm also a computer science major and a cybersecurity minor.
And hey guys, I'm Darren. I'm a senior computer science major with a minor in psychology. So, just to start us off here, how's everyone feeling today on a scale of 1 to 5?
I think I'm going to go like a low 4. Okay. I have a lot of work that I need to be doing, and it's a little chilly outside, but I know that the moment I walk back outside, it's going to be like 10 degrees warmer, and it's going to be absolutely perfect. So yeah. I'm quite looking forward to that.
3, exam, as per usual. Today's Orgo, though, so it's the day I stay here until like 9 o'clock.
Oh, brutal. But let's see. We'll go 3.5. I'm in much the same boat as Nathan, where I have a good bit of work to do, but whenever I step outside, like any desire to actually do it just melts away because it is unreasonably nice outside. I went over to the lake over Y Beach over the weekend, and I got kind of like lobstered on the back of my neck, and so I'm still slightly feeling that burn, but other than that, I'm good.
We'll go 5. I had a very productive weekend and covered one of the last hurdles that I had this semester.
Let's nice. Go.
That's nice.
I'll stick to, you know what? No, I'll do 5 too. Like, why not? I had a really eventful weekend and it was very tiring. Like, I spent some time building a wheelchair ramp this weekend. Just like one morning.
That's
not
awesome.
Not like a ton of time, but I also got sunburnt. And then I had dinner with my family who I haven't seen in a minute for like my birthday. So it's just overall a great time.
Nice. Very nice.
So, for the last several weeks, we've been doing research on growing up, and like to be a little more specific on what we mean by growing up, like we discussed the life stage of emerging adulthood, which is generally defined as the phase between like late adolescence and actual adulthood, where, you know, you are typically between the ages of like 18 to 25 and you go to college, you start your career, you find out what you want to do, what you want to be, where you want to be, all of those questions. And like also, you know, exploring the transitions from high school into college and then college into the workforce. So two of us, me and Nathan, are actually about to undergo this transition in 1 month. So to start us off, Nathan, how are you feeling about graduating?
I feel like I'm living a lie. No, I'm serious, because yes, I graduate in 1 month. First off, that doesn't feel real, but I feel like that's a very common experience. Like, it doesn't really feel real until like you're actually walking that stage, right? But on top of that, like, I have my graduation schedule is absolutely wild, because I graduate with my bachelor's in a month, but then I technically get my master's in August. So I'm kind of living that lie where it's like, no, I'm still a student for an extra few more months. Ignore the fact that I'm going to be in North Carolina that entire time, and all of my other friends will be graduated and starting their jobs, and I won't be hanging out with them nearly as much. So like, and on top of that, I don't even start my job until November.
Yeah.
So I've got like a really weird setup going on where it's like I'm kind of graduating, but I'm also not, and also I still have like 6 more months until my job actually starts.
That's weird.
So that's kind of a weird spot to be in, and I don't think I would even mind graduation very much, because I'm like I'm ready to be out of school, right? But I don't
you
think
say
I
that
would
twice.
What's that?
You could say that twice, three times, 50 times.
I think I'm ready to be out of school. However, I think what makes it very difficult is the fact that I am moving to the other side of the country. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be a much more pleasant experience if it was like, okay, at the very least, my friends are within like a reasonable driving distance, right? But now I have to fly anytime I want to see them.
It's a reasonable plane distance.
It's a reasonable plane distance. That's so true.
Adding the across the country, like, unknown aspect to it all is definitely you know, a bigger hurdle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because for me, right, I'm about to graduate and I'm not doing any of this weird stuff this guy's doing. I'm graduating and starting my job a month later, but I'm moving like back to my hometown. So I know where I'm going. I know who I'll be around. Like I know the place already. Like I'm feeling good about that part.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just dealing with the emotions of leaving college, not so much with like starting the new chapter. Well, I mean, you know, they're still there, but they're not as complicated. I've pretty much felt everything you could feel about graduating this semester so far. Right now, I'm in a phase of like excitement mostly. Like I'm so over being educated. But at the same time, I thought I would be much more hesitant to want to leave, but I should have maybe known that I'd be okay with it, because like I feel like I've always been a pretty decisive person. You know, when I make a choice or when something's about to happen to me, I'm like, yep, this is going to happen. And then I'm going to move forward and it's going to be cool. Like, it's going to be fine. And so, like, on one hand, yeah, I'm, like, really going to miss, like, not just my immediate friend group, you know, my roommates, but also, like, the extended community here with the clubs that I'm in. Like, all of that is going to fade away. And that'll be sad. But I'm also ready for that to happen in a weird way. Like, I'm ready to, like, live more independently and, like, spend a little more time focusing on, like, my, like, personal life.
Yeah.
So in some ways, I'm excited about it.
Yeah. The question that I wanted to actually ask you two who are graduating, I know that there are several studies that we've looked at and we're going to, like, cover more later in this episode. But there were a couple studies talking about, like, this disconnect between expectations and reality during large transition stages in our life. And so I wanted to ask you two, what like component of like growing up, like this transition slash being an adult, graduation, all that, what part do you feel least prepared for? Like what specific component?
Least prepared for?
I want to say we've talked about this before. We've definitely talked about it in class. I don't know if we've talked about it on the pod. I think making friends outside of college is going to be a very odd experience.
I'm terrified of that.
Yeah, I think we did touch on that on the loneliness episode.
Mm-hmm. That I would say is probably like one of the things I feel the least prepared for, because it is just such a foreign experience. Like obviously I have made friends outside of like school before, but it has not been like the primary thing that I have had to rely on. So that's very uncharted waters for me. I'm kind of interested to see how it goes.
Yeah, I've heard stories of like, you know, my parents' friends' kids that are like 5 or so years older than me that like they graduate, they move to their own, you know, city by themselves and they live in a small little apartment and like they just cannot make a friend and like they're having a terrible time with it. And I know that, you know, I don't know this person very well. I don't know how, maybe they suck. Maybe they're very unpersonable and I'll be fine, but it still definitely worries me. But I at least get to cheat a little bit and move back to my hometown where I have at least a couple connections left, you know, and like I'm in the upstate still. Like I can come up to Clemson if I'm that lonely and like see a couple people that haven't graduated yet. In terms of what I feel the least prepared for, I don't know, like work life, I've kind of already dealt with a lot. Like, I feel like I'm ready for that like mode as opposed to like school. I feel like I'm more prepared to have a job than I am to like do a master's. Like, I would be terrible at that. I know that like me personally, I have a pretty big like awkward move up incoming where like I'm moving into like an area that someone else needs to move stuff out of, that being my sister. And she's not doing that until July and I'm moving in May. So it's going to be a rough summer space wise, but that is like not a huge deal because then it'll be great. So what about you guys? Because I know it's coming up for you. You're all not that far away. Well, except for the, yeah.
Well, Christian's probably the closest.
Yeah, Christian's getting near.
You're almost soon, there.
Right? I'm still a little bit in disbelief of how relatively, I guess, fast the time has flown. Feels like just yesterday I was walking onto campus and being the new kid, and now it's like oh, can you speak here and give advice to freshmen about this and so on and so forth.
And you join a club and you look at the people and you're like, they must all be older than me. And you're like, hey, so what's up with you? And they're like, yeah, I'm 17. I'm like, what do you mean you're 17? This is college.
It's like, I'm not used to being the old person in a lot of these rooms. And it is kind of refreshing to see, you know, a lot of your personal growth and everything like that. But it is definitely daunting to realize, like, oh, wow, the time is flying. I need to be a bit more intentional about how I go about life as a whole.
Yeah. College has moved like distressingly fast. I'm still an underclassman, so I can stick my head in the sand for a little bit longer and be like, I'm not old at all. But the memories of graduating from high school actually are still fresh enough in my mind of like somewhat being able to relate to that feeling of, wow, this is kind of like a weird like transitional point of where we're neither in like one particular community or another. There's weird in between points. And yeah,
basically the same as Owen. Like, I'm still remembering graduating from high school and then like thinking back, I'm like, is it gonna be the same as graduating college, or will it not be? Because I plan on going to grad school, not really straight into industry, but that might change. So I feel like going to grad school is a different growing up than going
different,
into industry. I'm just doing more school to escape the job market.
Hey, maybe the job market's gonna be like amazing, like what, 2037 when you finally get out of college?
I graduate 26.
I'm messing with you.
Dina's gonna have like 15 degrees.
Yeah. I never want to leave.
Be a forever student.
I do think that the thing you mentioned earlier, Owen, about the expectations is definitely, it plays into it whether or not you want it to or not. This cultural expectation of college being the best years of your life, not only does it mean that when you come to college, you have all of these really high expectations for it, and maybe they, like, as soon as you get there, reality sets in and it kind of hurts your experience. It kind of works the other way, where I'm exiting college and for my whole life I've been told, like, college is the best part. It's the best part. And I'm like, well, that's over now. Mm-hmm. Yay. Like, what do you mean? I'm only 22 and, like, the best part of my life is over? That's crazy. So, like, you kind of feel like you're supposed to be, like, you're supposed to dread it. You're supposed to be so sad. It's like, no, I'm leaving college. I'll never have fun again. But I definitely don't look at it that way personally. But it still affects me, you know? Like, that cultural, like, expectation is definitely still up there in my head somewhere. And it makes me a little worried.
Yeah, there's this weird, like, social dissonance between the idea of, oh, college is supposed to be like the best years of your life, and then also we make fun of people who peaked in college. But one of the things you said about college supposed to be like the best years of your life and that expectation not quite lining up with reality is almost verbatim a quote from one of my favorite studies that we took a look at in preparing for this podcast. This was a 2021 study by Worsley, Harrison, and Cochran titled Bridging the Gap, Exploring the Unique Transition from Home, School, or College into University. And rather than doing any sort of like standard like quantitative analysis of like, say, people's survey results, they basically asked a bunch of students in the UK a bunch of really open-ended questions about like the transitional period in between high school or their equivalent of it in college. And one of the quotes I have written down here that particularly stuck out to me on that was, you have these expectations about what it's going to be like, and then it's different, like social stuff. I get along with all of my flatmates, but it's just different to how everyone said it would be. Or you have this massive expectation of university being this life-changing experience, and sometimes you get here and it's just university.
It's just university.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the shows with the high schoolers, and they're always looking forward to college. Oh, yeah. And then the shows in college, or like the shows out of college, like Friends or something, they're like, ah, oh, back in the good old days.
Back in the good old days of college.
Like, they're like acting like college is always going to be the best part of your life.
I'm just now realizing that, like, I can think of so many sitcoms that are placed in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them, you know, the end of the show is when the characters graduate and go off to college, and they're excited for it. But I can't really name any sitcoms about college students.
That's a really good point.
Community, which is a community college, and like part of the bit is they're all like stuck there, and it's very different.
This episode of Seek Air in the Spotlight is brought to you by.
But like, I can't think of any like traditional college experience, like undergrad sitcom, because then I can't think of what the natural conclusion for that would be. And like how they would paint it as like super exciting. I feel like it would be like sad.
The only one I can think of is like Boy Meets World, where they start off in like middle school or like elementary school and they go off to college.
That's crazy.
But it's a bit different because it's like the same friend group throughout the whole show. Because why are they going to hire new actors?
Yeah, the high school graduation as a sitcom ending thing like actually kind of resonates with me. And that I remember for like the last 2 to 3 months of high school, I was like, oh, I'm not really sure I'm ready to leave. There's still like so many loose ends being like I need to tie up. Oh, like I'm not sure I'm ready for college. And then like I distinctly remember like being on the graduation stage, like walking up there and having like this aha moment of, yeah, things wrapped up all right. I feel good about this. I'm ready.
And you literally narrated that while a camera was on you, and then it was the end of the show. It was freeze frame.
It was like a cut, like a camera angle of zooming out. Yep. It's like cinematic sweep of the whole graduation crowd.
And that's a wrap, guys.
I'm actually really happy you brought that up because I did wanna ask because I'm very curious how you three, Christian, Owen, Dina, felt about the high school graduation process, moving into college, your expectations, because Darren, I can't speak for you. I came into college not knowing if I was basically going to have an in-person class.
Yeah.
So like I did not go in with the expectation that like it was going to be this incredible experience. I also didn't graduate from high school.
I actually did graduate from high school. We all walked. We were in a giant arena, though, like spread out. And then there was a plastic divider between us and the principal when we took a picture. It was a little silly. But I did walk. But yeah, go for it.
Graduation felt very unique to me because I went to a residential high school my last few years. And partially because of COVID, I was virtual a good chunk of my senior year, so I only really went back for those last 3 days before graduation to sort of, I guess, relive some experiences. And as a result, it felt like a very clear sort of coming to an end because I had that moment where I was back on campus for the first time in a good bit of time. Mm. So the transition was pretty simple to me because of, I guess, the way that life was set up at that point to where, okay, I'm distinctly back on campus. There's no more classes. There's just time for me to catch up with friends and graduate and then move on to Clemson.
I had a very normal senior year. Like by 2022, like things were more or less just back to normal. And looking back on this, like it's weird to me in retrospect, but I'm not sure I really had like any sort of like imposed expectations on like how awesome or how not awesome college was going to be. For me, it was just college just is like, this is like a logical just next step in my life and I'm going to take it at face value. I'm not sure if like bringing in any sort of preconceived expectations helped me or hurt me, but it's definitely interesting looking back at it that like there was like zero roadmap of I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I got on campus and it's like, okay, so now what?
Mm-hmm. I mean, basically the same thing. I was like, okay, college is next. time to move in. I didn't really think much about it. I wasn't like scared. I think probably the thing I was most worried about is like all my friends are going to College of Charleston and I'm going to Clemson and that's 4 hours away.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty bad.
It was like the typical transition stuff, but I wasn't like missing high school or anything. Mm-hmm. I was like, that period of my life is tied up in a nice bow and it's time to just go to college. And almost I feel like because my high school was like almost like a college prep high school the whole time, I was low-key prepping for college and it was always in my sights, so it wasn't like an unexpected transition. I was always working towards it, so it was a natural next step.
I do want to touch on before we move away from the expectations idea of like this concept of, you know, college is the best years of your life. Like, you're going to be best friends with your roommate. It's going to be just like every single movie, like all of that. And I think that it can definitely hurt your experience when you come here expecting all that to happen. But it definitely can if you come in thinking that's just going to happen without you trying. If you walk in here and you think that, like, you know, college is just going to morph to what you want it to be, like, you're going to become disappointed and you're going to get frustrated with the experience. And you can find those sorts of things. Like, you can make college an amazing time, but it takes a lot of effort and it's not always the best. Like, you're going to have to reach out to people. You're going to have to join a bunch of different clubs. Some of them aren't going to work. You might not like your roommate, and there's really nothing you can do about that. You know, you're just going to have to try again next year. These sorts of things are important to, like, you know, be intentional about.
To tie that into the Bridging the Gap paper that Owen quoted recently, one of the quotes we have written down here is, you lose your identity a bit in university. I think everyone does that just because of the sheer number of people. And that is something that I think that if you do put in that effort, like, I wholeheartedly disagree with. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like for myself personally, but also for a lot of people that I know, like, they only really truly kind of figured out who they were and what their identity was, like, as a result of being in college. But I think a lot of that stems from putting in that effort and from, like, trying to grow as a person and meeting new people and having new experiences.
Yeah, I have it written down here that, like, people that had a not so great experience in high school tend to cling to the idea of college as, like, this fresh start. Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't have that bad of a time in high school, some people really like the idea of, like, starting fresh. Mm-hmm. But then if you pull up and you don't put any effort in, and you did in fact start fresh from nothing, you're not really going to have anything.
Yeah, the stars aren't going to align and a friend isn't going to drop from the sky. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to put in the effort not only to find your people, but also to find, like, yourself and what you want to be.
I think the second half of that quote about you become just another person rather than having that whole life around you like you would have done when you were at school touches on an interesting point, because I guess what they were trying to allude at is, and this is a point we've made previously on the podcast, with when you're in high school, you know, it's a much smaller group of people. You're able to get to know everyone and sort of recognize faces, even if it's not a super personal connection and relationship with each and everyone. But when you're in college, especially at a bigger university, you don't necessarily recognize everyone. You might feel like you're just another face in a crowd of people and you don't really stand out as much.
Yeah. And to tie into something that Dina mentioned a moment earlier, Dina, you had a comment regarding, you know, coming to college and having prepared to that and it not being a very, like, unexpected transition that occurred. I kind of want to talk about the transition into, like, you know, the job market out of college, all of that, because I feel like something that most people can resonate with is that there is a very big kind of societal expectation for people to be preparing for that transition into the job market, like, much earlier and much earlier. And one of the things that kind of talked about that was this one paper that we read called Growing Up is Harder to Do by Furstenberg. And this just talked about how growing up and those transitions has changed throughout time. This paper touched on, not only is there, like, an increasing expectation for people to prepare for the workforce earlier, there's increases in requirements for higher education, prices are increasing basically everywhere, and in a lot of ways growing up is harder to do than it was before. Of course, we don't have, you know, at least in the US, we're not, like, living through the Cold War. But there are definitely other things that have become more difficult. So I'm curious what y'all's thoughts on
that. I remember that one touching on how much more common it is these days for people to move from college back into their parents' mm-hmm. places, because, like, it's pretty hard to just buy your own house. And I mean, I'm about to do that, right? Like, and I'm excited for it, but it's definitely a different landscape, because mm-hmm. you're so accustomed to this idea of, like, going out on your own, right? And then, like, I've gone out on my own. I'm in college. I've become my own adult. And now I'm about to move back in with my parents. And, like, they're great people. And they, you know, have always encouraged me to be my own person and to be an adult. And they will let me have my own business. But that's not the case for everybody. So, like, there's this economic push to put you back into your childhood home. But then, like, you know, personally, you might end up, like, there might be an identity clash there where your parents expect to have their kid back and you're not a kid anymore. And then, like, you want to be a full grown adult, and it could get even more, you know, confusing, I guess.
Yeah. And in talking about like this transition into adulthood and more broadly, like the question of what does it mean to be an adult? Like what specific like parameters or benchmarks do you like, are you going to have to hit to become an adult? It's kind of crazy how much of like those like prerequisites are like directly tied into factors that may not be so salient now, but were like very much things say in like the 1950s and 1960s, and just the 1950s in general being such a crazy point for like so much of our cultural expectations and messaging, so much of like what we know of like, I'm gonna like have like a two-car garage, like this like super stereotypical idea of like a nuclear family, gonna have kids, all of that, like those benchmarks that we still hold today very much stem from that time period, even though the economic and social conditions that may make somebody transition into those stages a lot slower than they did before, those are more present now. And so people get like this weird like cognitive disconnect between what they feel like society is messaging them to do and what timeline they should be on versus what is actually realistic given current economic and social conditions.
I mean, yeah, you'll have like a 30-year-old with a PhD that's like 3 years into their career and they'll be like, yeah, I don't feel like an adult yet. Mm-hmm. And it's like, whoa, that's crazy.
I feel like defining adulthood is also different between cultures. The same paper touched on it too. Quote, the expectations seem to be in immigrant families, their young people more often help support their parents. And like, personally, I've always just imagined myself, once I get like a stable job, my family would move in with me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's always been the expectation for me. And I like want that. Mm-hmm. But I know like my friends who don't have immigrant parents or like just from different cultures, that's not their defining mm-hmm. of adulthood. So like it's also different between like individuals. Like how I define growing up is probably going to be different to how Owen defines it or how Christian defines it.
Yeah. And I think one major factor in like this disconnect between the perceived timeline for growing up and the actual timeline for growing up is we've already talked about master's degrees so far in this episode, but it's like the increased like credentialization and push for higher education in that, say in the 1950s, I think not a whole lot of people were going to college. The number was growing pretty significantly compared to say like the early 1900s, but it was still significantly less than like what we do today. And, more and more we have people who rather like they do their 4 years of undergrad, and for the past basically for like any other period in human history, it's like, okay, that's more than enough to like grab an entry-level job. But more and more people are like, okay, I need to get my master's, I need to get like a JD to go be a lawyer. The bar is getting higher and higher, and that's pushing back like the start of adult life. But our cultural expectations aren't really moving in lockstep with it. And within economics more in general, there is this persistent macroeconomic theory called the college wage gap premium of there are more college graduates, but the demand for college graduates and people with higher, with like advanced degrees are increasing at a faster rate than the increase in college graduates. And so that kind of like hyped up demand is like pushing more and more people to be like, hey, I need to get another degree. Hey, I need to get another degree after that other degree. And it's really just like this like prisoner's dilemma type arms race to just delay being an adult as much as possible to get the best kind of credentials. And I think that's really contributing to this big social disconnect a lot of people are feeling between comparing themselves to like this 1950s idea of, oh, I'm going to be married and have two kids by 25. And then they look and they're like, I'm 28. I'm finishing my PhD. What the heck am I doing with my life? And I think it's causing a lot of undue stress for a lot of people.
I absolutely love quoting this. ERI, effort reward imbalance. Mm-hmm. It's always what I think of now whenever I hear of conversations such as that. You know, got a degree, got to get another degree after that. Oh no, I'm 28. I haven't done the things that I wanted to do at this point because I've been preparing for this future, right? You're putting in all this effort trying to seek out a reward that's in the future and not doing much for your present self. And I feel like we're seeing a lot of that today.
Absolutely.
And as a result, like that emerging adulthood phase is just growing larger and larger. I mean, larger. Like,
when you start high school, like the goal is listed to you as like, you're going to get a career eventually. Mm-hmm. And little do some people know, but when they get told that for the first time when they're 14, it'll be another, you know, 14 years before they get a job. Like high school to the end of grad school. That's
what is absolutely crazy to me is how much, and I know this is going to sound a little bit ridiculous, but how much like second and third grade actually makes like a big, how much of an impact that has on your life. Like I remember at that point in time being placed into, we called it AIG, which was like basically the, oh, these are the group of kids at the school that are really good, so they're going to get put in the special classes. And then later on, like they're, oh, in middle school, you're either an AIG student or you're not an AIG student. And that has had a lot of impacts on my life. Mm-hmm. And I know someone who, when they were in, I believe it was second grade, they had a test that they had to take. And it was basically a placement test to determine, you know, exactly that. And they failed it as a second grader. They failed it, of course, because they're a second grader. They don't know anything. And their parents ended up fighting for them to like be placed in there, basically like, you know, just bugging the administration. And that completely changed what middle school they got put into, what high school they got put into, and like just had such a huge change in trajectory on like their lives. And I feel like we probably don't see that too much here in South Carolina, but like in a lot of, I know this is a bigger thing in a lot of like more metropolitan areas, like in cities, there's a lot more competition for that sort of thing. So you have parents who are literally like trying to push their second graders to like do good on the tests, so that way you can get placed into a good school. So that way you can go to a good school. So you can go to a good school.
So you can get a career. But trust me, in 21 years, when you get your doctorate, this is going to be so worth it.
Yeah. Seriously, like those like standardized tests are being pushed so early. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah, this isn't even just like a United States phenomenon either. Like I know within, for instance, the German school system, like they have our equivalent of elementary school. They call it Grundschule from like 5 until 10 years old. And from that point forward, like the promise or grades, like the promise you've shown are like the grades that you've gotten in like Grundschule, then essentially sorts you into one of three different versions of a high school track. They call it Hochschule, Realschule, or Universität, not Universität, Gymnasium. And for those first two, that's like basically like proto-vocational education. And for that last track, that's like the only one that typically goes to like a actual college at the end of it. And yeah, that's very though those expectations are like very structural in German, it can be a lot more like implicit in the United States of, though nobody is explicitly telling you, you are going to college, you have no other choice. A lot of that messaging kind of rubs off on you when you look around and you see, everybody else in my graduating high school class is also looking at college. I should probably look at college.
And especially if that's been an expectation placed on you since before you can even remember, like you will make it here. And suddenly, you know, you're not in that home environment anymore. And you kind of maybe reassess, like, did I want to do this? Like, maybe you still do. You probably still do. Like, you know, if you step back and you go, well, I made it into college and I already paid for the first year, it's probably the best idea. I should stick with it. That's generally the conclusion people come to. But you still have to have that moment where you, like, claim that as your own plan, I guess. Yeah. Not everyone, but it's...
Because yeah, before then, it's kind of everyone else's plan
exactly.
for you.
Like, I have a distinct memory of during my co-op. this is a little bit weird, but one of my coworkers came up to me, like a 55-year-old man, and he's like, hey, you're a 20-some-year-old, you're in college, you're getting a co-op and you're working, you're doing great. And he was like, how do I get my son to do that? He's 19 and won't go to college. And I'm like, bro, I don't know. Like, I told him straight up, I was like, I just kind of did it. Like, it was the path set in front of me and I just sort of rolled on through it is really what it felt like. I didn't find it in me to go to college. Like, it wasn't really a choice. And so I had nothing to tell this guy. I was like, I don't know, just I guess tell him to go to college that another time and maybe it'll work the fifth time or over. It was a very weird moment.
I think that really relates back to a point Darren made before with If you're unsatisfied with high school, you sort of treat college as a magical bullet or magical silver bullet. And I think society as a whole almost treats college as a silver bullet in terms of just you go to college, you make these friends that'll last you a lifetime, you find a career that'll work perfectly for you, you get all these internships, these research experiences and everything like that, and automatically your life will be perfect and so on and so forth. But that's just not the reality for most people. You know, people will have different paths that might work better for them, but yet society as a whole is still pushing all of us down this college path.
We also see this in like the work, the transition from college to workforce as well, seen in the paper, Contemporary Nursing Graduates Transition to Practice, A Critical Review of Transition Models by Graf, Jacob, Twig, and Nadabi. They talk about different transitional models for nursing students from college to nursing school. And a lot of it is there's this transition with skill base, like Bridges transition theory, or Benner's novice to expert theory is novice, advanced, beginner, competence, proficient, and expert, which is purely based on their skill as a nurse. But there's also like an emotional transition, such as Bridges transition theory, letting go, neutral, and new beginning. And amongst all the transition theories they were talking about, there was some discussion on them letting go of expectations that undergrad has prepared them for and having to finally develop like the experience to being a nurse during nursing school and like putting what they learned into the field. And it might not match with what they thought they always wanted to do with nursing, but it also it's like a transitional period they need to become a nurse. And I feel like even though this paper is specifically for nursing, I feel like it could work for a lot of different career paths.
Mm-hmm. There's always going to be a little bit of a, I'm forgetting the term. It was like transitional shock.
Yeah,
I believe.
Or reality shock.
Reality shock was what it was called when they, you know, finally make it into practice. And, you know, in nursing specifically, especially if you're in like a hospital, it can be a pretty serious and traumatic environment, which, you know, if I'm, you know, a programming engineer for, you know, LPL Financial, I'm probably not going to like see a dead person or something, but it still might hit you here and there, like certain moments that you really, you had this expectation of like, I'm going to get to work and everyone's going to love me. And then like the first time that someone like takes issue with something you've done, or like the first moment of like tension, you're like, oh no, like it hits you really hard. And you like, you know, you maybe you have such little experience as, you know, this new role in your life that like you kind of start to tear yourself apart. You're like, maybe I'm bad at this. Maybe like I'm not set up for this role. Like I don't have any confidence in my abilities. Like the only thing that can really bolster you against that sort of a, you know, reaction is experience and like trusting your own experience. Mm-hmm. And like when you don't have that, it can be really hard to bounce back from, you know, scary moments, I guess, in the workplace.
Yeah. Like failures are always going to be a part of your exactly. life, but that's just what makes you stronger.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And one other like way which I want to differentiate the high school to college transition versus the college to workforce transition is that the latter now more and more is becoming more and more unstable in terms of staying in one place for a particularly long time. And that for college, unless you like transfer or drop out, you're going to be like more or less in the same place, belonging to the same community for 4 years. In the past, having that long-term community was indeed a thing for the workforce. I mean, there's like the whole stereotype of like the 70-year-old like working at the exact same company for like his all 45 years of his career, getting like a nice pension, retiring without having to work for anybody else. And I now feel like less and less that's the case, in mm-hmm. that job hopping is now the norm. And there's a paper specifically that talks about this that we took a look at. It's the new life stage of emerging adulthood at ages 18 to 29 years, implications for mental health. And we've already touched on most of what that paper talked about with the growing up is harder to do one, because it again talks about how our cultural expectations and economic and social realities are now way disconnected. But one thing they talked about in particular was that there's just not a whole lot of stability once you get out of college. And a lot of that comes from this constantly changing workplace, in that now, rather than like staying at the same company and trying to get pay promotions by just moving up the ladder, there's more of this like lateral slash upwards movement from one company to another. And we talked earlier about how to some degree we're worried like, hey, how the heck are we going to make friends once we're out of college? I think the work community was a much more viable thing, say 50, 60 years ago, when the majority of the workforce in a company at any given time was static in one particular place and was going to stay at that company for a long time. But when there's so much transition, it makes the workplace a whole lot less viable place for to like find people who you can hang out with outside of the workplace. And yeah, that's one particular thing in which the college transition and the workplace transition, I think, are very different.
And I know it's just me going through this, but the number one place you're supposed to make friends in your adult life is work. Mm-hmm. I'm full remote.
Oh, yeah.
There will be approximately one other LPL employee living in Greenville that I know of, and we're already friends.
Mm-hmm. You can be better friends.
Yay.
Yay.
What were you going to say, Nate?
Yeah, job hopping has definitely become normalized. Like, I have family who have been at the same job for literally, I think, about 25 years now. And I feel like that used to be much more common, but that is actually insane to me. Like, I genuinely cannot imagine, like, sticking around at the same place for that period of time. But I feel like that's because I have grown up in an environment where that is absolutely not the case. So something that I wanted to ask y'all, does anyone have any salient pieces of advice for people coming into college, maybe even people who have already graduated college or are currently going through it, just regarding growing up and your experiences?
I would say to always start as early as possible when it comes to like your homework assignments, projects, and anything like that, being that it can be super busy as a college student, and you may not necessarily have as much time in the future to do the work that you, sorry, I messed that up. You may not have as much time in the future to do the work that you currently have assigned. So I would always say just start as early as possible, even if it's just a draft or an incomplete version of that assignment, and then refine as time goes on. So you have ample time to improve the assignment, go to office hours, and really relax when it comes time for the deadline.
Because I agree with that completely, because like working on something that's already, you know, you've got something down feels so much better. Starting from nothing, especially when it's due pretty soon, feels terrible. And I also am a firm believer in like sleeping on it. Like if you can work on something for 30 minutes a day and then sleep between it, you're going to get that done in like, let's say, 3 total hours. When if you had to sit down and do it all at once, it'd probably take you 8. Like the amount of time you can spend just like kind of letting it soak in and like thinking about it while you're not even trying to think about it is very valuable.
And in a similar vein, I would say to make the most of college as a collaborative environment, mm-hmm. and that when you're beginning these initial like drafting or like scaffolding processes for working on things, like don't be afraid to like have like somebody like get like a second set of eyes on it. I know for like essentially 80 to 90% of colleges across the United States, they have some form of writing lab or writing center where you can, for instance, like come in, even if you don't have like a finished draft of something, and like you just brainstorm what particular components like you might need for a writing assignment. Or you can like find somebody who's in like a very similar field as you and like bounce ideas back and forth. And doing all of these processes, I think, contribute both really well to like the time management component of starting a project early and starting it in a way that doesn't feel intimidating, while also aiding to like broader intellectual development.
On that note, I would also say, like, you know, on the note of not doing things all by yourself and trying to be collaborative, go to your TA and your professor's office hours. They're really useful. I feel like back in high school, it was always very difficult to get like feedback while you're working on an assignment from mm-hmm. like a teacher, because it's like you've got 5 minutes until the next class anyways. Yeah. And it's not like they have time set aside for this. But in college, you both, your professor will typically have office hours and your TA will have office hours. So you, as long as it lines up okay with your schedule, like you have those opportunities to get feedback early on and to, you know, kind of remove any blockers that you may currently have. It's a big help. I may not be the best person to ask about that because I don't do it very often, but you should.
I mean, and on like beyond just like the obvious help component, a lot of professors are like genuinely like really, really cool people. Yeah, and I figure out like usually like an additional like professor per semester where I'm like, you're cool, I'm gonna go invade your office hours and like yap about something that like you are interested in and I am also interested in, and just like build that connection, because like it's sometimes like, for instance, like asking like professors about their research interests, like what they're like currently working on, for instance, is a really, really cool way to just like find fields like you never would have thought of before. And having those connections is good both in like a professional development sense, and that like these are the people that you really want to like receive rec letters from if you've made that connection over and over again in office hours. And also, yeah, they're just cool people.
Dude, talking to your professors has been like so important for me. Mm-hmm. From like a professional like development perspective, I feel like half of the things at least that I have done outside of classes while I'm here at Clemson has been because I actually talked to like my professors. And I haven't needed those letters of rec, but I have known people who like did, and being able to actually like come to professors that actually know you, and you don't have to like give them a resume and then they try and put something haphazardly together based on that. It's pretty important. It's very nice. Another thing that I wanted to talk about was like, go to bed, get some sleep. If you're a longtime listener of the pod, you may know that I am one of the worst people when it comes to this. But this semester in particular, I've actually been, you know, getting close to 8 hours almost every single night. And the quality of life improvement has been pretty significant. Go to bed. I remember during like the high school grind, you know, it was like, especially that junior year, just being up late every single night. And then that kind of transferred into my college habits. And now that I'm not doing that as much, everything is just way nicer. You feel less lethargic. You think clearer. You get your assignments done faster so you can then get more sleep.
Yeah, and like you're not always going to be perfect. And no. Like some assignments are going to be way, way, way too ridiculous, and you'll be up super late trying to finish them up at like, you know, midnight. But like, especially with studying, like staying up until like 3-4 in the morning to try to study for something with an exam like next morning, don't do it. Just go to bed. Like, it'll help you so much more if you just go to bed, in my personal opinion. Like, cram a little bit, sleep on it, maybe even wake up early, get your brain going, look at it a little bit right before the exam, but don't stay up super, super late trying to cram.
Yeah. Two things regarding that. Towards the end of last semester, I noticed that the last hour and a half of my day was far, far less productive, or like had even like the capacity to like ever be productive than the first hour and a half of my day. And so I made some tiny change of, rather than like staying up till like 12:30, I shifted my bedtime an hour and a half forward, and then started getting up an hour and a half earlier. And I've found that's very, very helpful. Your mileage may vary depending on whether you're like a morning person or a night owl, but figuring out like that sweet spot of, okay, how can I make the most of the limited hours that I have so I can then spend the hours that I want to doing things that aren't like menial schoolwork or other tasks. Figuring out that sweet spot of when you work best is super, super important. And sleep just in general is really, really important. I'm definitely not a neuroscientist, but the way that I understand it is that with sleep essentially works as kind of like a indexing process for your brain, in that you, rather than like actively learning something new, your brain basically just like washes all of like through all of like the prior information that it's gained over like since the last REM sleep cycle, and essentially like files it away in like a neater like structure for you to be able to like recall it more effectively. And if you don't get sleep, then having that kind of long-term memory and being able to like recall things on the spot for exams is going to be a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I know some of the terminology for that. It's like it goes through the brain, it strengthens the connections that it like understands are important, and then it prunes ones that are useless that it made throughout the day. This is especially important in children who make 10 billion new connections, you know, like every single day, and some of them are like completely nonsensical, and they have to sort of make sense of it while they sleep and like sort their brain.
Yeah, I mean, like as college students, like our brain is like nowhere near like finishing developing. Like we are still in like a fairly like neuroplastic stage, and so being able to make the most of that like will involve like a good deal of sleep.
And speaking of, you know, satisfying your basic human needs, also eat food. I know that especially during times where like I've been very stressed, there were a lot of days where it's like, oh, I didn't eat and it's 6 p.m. I guess I'll have dinner now. It's really been useful for me to do like some mild form of like meal prepping as of late. So I'll literally just like one day over the weekend, I cook together like a bunch of like burrito filling. And then every day around lunch, I make a burrito and I toast it on the oven or on the stove and I've got myself food. And actually giving yourself the energy that you need in addition to that sleep. It's 10 out of 10. I'm telling you, it's great. Actually eating, actually sleeping. Wonderful.
I like how both of your pieces of advice were eat and sleep. And then yeah. You said for both of them, I only figured this out this year.
Yes. No, that is true. That is true. I've only just started consistently doing both of those.
So you would think that our brain would prioritize like the most basic functions the most.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, here we are. Yeah.
It doesn't. Because you're like, well, I already exist and I'm going to probably continue existing tomorrow. So like that can wait for now. I have to do this thing that's due at midnight, right?
Say, your brain has never not perceived a state where you exist. It's like, wait, I can cease to be. And,
yeah.
But no, I was going somewhere with that. Now I'm not. It'll come to me.
Yeah. Now, while we are talking about food, though, learn to cook, guys. It's not that scary.
True.
If you don't live, you know, in a campus environment where you eat in a dining hall all the time, you're probably in a situation where you'll have to cook to like have a nice meal. Like that's the first time you've been in that situation. You know, normally your parents do it. So the tendency to not cook and just, you know, go eat out with your friends every day, Grubhub something, you do anything other than cook. Frozen meal, like it can be a little bit tempting, but especially if you can get together with your roommates or your friends, like at least once a week, try it out. Like learning to cook is a really, really valuable life skill. And like when you can't Grubhub something every night forever. I mean, unless you don't want to live past like, I don't know, 15. So like, especially for after college, you know, having that skill already prepared a little bit is really useful. I've personally had a really great time learning to cook over the course of my college career, and eating with my friends, you know, cooking food for my friends. Like it's a really nice feeling. It kind of feels a little bit more like a family like time, you know, it's a little bit more like you're at home. It's a very nice feeling. I recommend it.
Yeah, that is the number one thing I am just the most excited for, like when I move off of campus next year, and that I'm going to be basically in like a housing complex where like a bunch of my friends are like basically a couple of houses down, and like family dinner night, going to go so crazy.
I mean, cooking food is also like cheaper than going out.
It's also much cheaper.
Each time. And it's like also another thing to focus on is like financial management, especially during that first transition. Some people might get a little crazy and eat out all the time or like buy whatever they need. But like it's good to gain those financial and budgeting skills early on so you don't make mistakes that might like affect your life way later.
Yeah, just like forming bad habits, you know, right when you start out. When you still kind of feel like, you know, you just stopped being tethered to your parents and they were making a lot of the financial decisions for you, right? Like you didn't have full financial autonomy, and then you get here and maybe you're not necessarily earning your own money yet, but you are on your own when you make financial choices. So like you might be spending someone else's money and forming a bad habit. And then as soon as it becomes your own money, you like don't know how to stop.
Yeah, see, this is another instance of like what you don't know can't hurt you, in the sense that we, especially more and more, like we pay with things not with like actual physical cash, but with credit cards and debit cards. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a impediment to budgeting, because you're not really associating it as like a physical transaction. It's just like you pay like you swipe like a magic like piece of plastic, and you don't really see the money transfer happen. And I think that's a really big roadblock to budgeting, is realizing that yes, money is real and exists in like some tangible form. It's not like a piece of plastic.
It's not on your phone, Apple Pay, imaginary Apple money.
See, I think that's so like interesting, because I that's a piece of advice that I've heard like a lot regarding like, you know, physical cash and versus like using a credit card or something where it's like you don't actually see the money transfer happen. I am way more likely to just like impulse spend if it's cash.
Interesting.
Because if it's like a credit card or a debit card, it's like I can see the number going down. I can see my net worth dropping. And, you know, at the end of the month, it's like I have to pay off like my credit card and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, wow, I spent a lot that month. What happened? And then I like literally feel bad as a result. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas with cash, it's like there is no trace of this whatsoever. That's I will forget this exists. So for me, actually, like being able to keep track of it all is like pretty important. And on the topic of credit cards, get a credit card.
Credit cards, Roth IRA, stocks.
True.
When did this turn into a finance podcast?
So we actually would like to introduce to you the CCARE crypto coin.
of great investment.
No. But seriously, like getting a credit card, getting a debit card, of course, is also really nice. But if you already have like a bank account set up, getting a credit card while you're a student, like a student credit card, it's going to be much easier, at least from my personal experience, while you're still in college and you can get that student credit card where banks are more likely to like want to take on risk, mm-hmm. even if you don't happen to have like a job, versus like getting it for the first time out of college and also just like building credit and all that early on. It's very, very useful to have. Yeah.
Definitely strong preference for credit over debit for the credit building mm-hmm. reason that you mm-hmm. mentioned earlier. And also I know several friends who have like either like misplaced their credit card or had like their information stolen from it for one reason or another. If some sort of fraudulent transaction goes through on your credit card, it's like a snap of the fingers to fix. If something like that happens in your debit card, it's a much, much bigger pain in the butt to get reversed. And if your goal is really to try to mitigate stressful situations, like you do not want to be using that debit card all that much.
Because I mean, if you think about it, when someone fraudulently uses your credit card, they're stealing the bank's money. Mm-hmm. You haven't given the bank their money back yet, mm-hmm. but if they're stealing off your debit card, they're stealing your money.
Yep.
And no one else cares about that.
My hard earned American green cash.
Another piece of advice that I would say is don't let perfect be the enemy of good. I think during your time in college, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, and some of them are going to be incredibly stupid and somewhat avoidable, but you aren't your mistakes, but you are your reactions and your recovery from those mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I would say definitely make sure to learn from those mistakes and just try to improve from them rather than try to avoid all of them over time in college.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're just lamenting on every mistake you made, you're not really truly learning from it. You're just being down, but not really using those mistakes to your advantage, which I feel like is probably one of the biggest things.
Yeah. You want to think about your basically like your diminishing returns to like pretty much any sort of activity that you do. And especially that goes for schoolwork and that like, hey, I can sit down and like grind out 10 hours of studying and probably get 100. Or hey, I can sit down and do an hour of studying and probably get like a 90. And I know which one I'm picking out of those two every single time. And it's just slight tangent. I thank the heavens every day that Clemson doesn't have a plus minus system for their grading.
Oh, God. Thank heavens, bro.
It's absolutely wonderful that like at the end of the day, the 100 will show up exactly the same as a 90 on my transcript. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Work smarter, not harder.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Something Christian said did remind me of another thing I really like to preach about, which is, you know, controlling your reaction to things. It kind of ties into something I jotted down about, you know, learning a little bit of conflict resolution, because you're going to be in a lot of situations with people that are a lot closer to you proximity wise than they ever were when you lived at home. You know, roommates are people that they're not your family, but you're still going to see them at their worst because you live with them, right? So you're going to have to learn how to navigate when they upset you and when you upset them. And so something I always like to say is you can't control your emotions. Like if something is going to upset you, it's going to upset you. But what you can control is how you turn that emotion into a reaction and put it back out into the world. Mm-hmm. And understanding that you have that power and then other people do have that power, but also a lot of times their reactions and what they put out into the world is motivated by emotions that they couldn't control, and like understanding where they're coming from and like why they might be upset and like coming to them, you know, about issues like that before it becomes a giant blow up. You know, I've heard way too many stories about people who like, we actually got in an application for someone to join the podcast next year discussing a roommate situation they had where like something as simple as not keeping the sink very tidy became this huge disaster that ended up ruining a friendship. And then they moved out because this roommate never brought up to them the fact that it made them upset until they had already decided that they were just a terrible person and hated her. You know, like it really helps to come to people before that.
Yeah, it sort of blows my mind a little bit. I can think of multiple instances actually where of like people that I know where they've talked to me about some sort of like a roommate conflict situation. I'm like, well, have you tried talking to them about it?
They always say no,
and they look at me like I've grown a second head.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah, it's having that like conflict resolution like tool in your toolbox is a super super important thing to have. Especially considering the fact that more likely than not, you'll be living with somebody else in a shared space for like a good chunk of the rest of your life.
I think that's the thing, is like people understand on a certain level, like they would have probably brought that sort of a thing up to a family member, but they're used to like everyone else in their lives being, you know, sort of a little more transient. Like, oh, I only see you at school. Like if I only see you at school and you do something that kind of bothers me, I'm just going to go home and like ignore it. It's not worth bringing up the conflict with you because I don't have that much skin in the game. But then you have to readjust that expectation to like, you're going to have to initiate conflict with people that you don't know that well in order to end up with both of you being happier in the long run. But it's definitely a new skill.
Communication with everything, with your roommates, with your professors. You're having issues or problems, go to your professors, be open with them. Go to your friends, communicate with them. Communicate with your friends that you may go to a different college, like out of state, so you can keep that connection. Communicate with the new friends you make. You're going to have to reach out and talk to people and probably get out of your comfort zone a little bit, but it's all for the good in the better run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at this advice list, and I see one last thing that we haven't really touched on yet. I would say that diligent time management. We've already talked about that to some degree in terms of starting projects early, but having specific time for specific things is a super important habit to start to form, in that we've talked about this on the podcast before, but there are so many like habits that have been like instilled into us that we just totally take for granted because they were instilled into us by our parents. And so much of like our middle school, high school life is essentially structured for us, and that like you go to 6 or 7 classes between like 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. You go do some sort of extracurricular activity from 4 to 6, and that's like 75% of your waking hours like planned out for you. You don't really get that in college. Like you've got some classes that you've got to go to, and you've got some scheduled meeting times for like advisors or clubs or whatever, but a lot more of that is totally up to you. And if you don't start forming that habit of going onto like Google Calendar and being like, all right, this time from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. will be like a work block time where I'll turn off my phone and just see what I can get done. If you don't do those kinds of things, I think it's a lot easier to just like, or it'll be, you're more likely to just totally get lost in the shuffle of things.
Mm-hmm. Using stuff like Google Calendar or like that Outlook calendar definitely helps visualize everything day to day. My Google Calendar saves me.
I tell you, Nathan blew my mind a couple of days ago, where he's like, did you know that there's this thing called Microsoft To Do, and it's already installed on your computer? And I like literally had like the Notepad app like pulled up with like my to-do list that I'd been working on for like, it's been like a running document for the past 2 weeks, and I imported it all into Microsoft To Do.
Oh,
and
let's now, go,
like,
you did it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And now it like bugs me, and like my computer makes a sound whenever like I have something to do today.
I was literally going to bring up Microsoft To Do and chill that for a moment. Yeah, having a to-do list has been really useful for me. Also, I'm personally not someone who has had a whole lot of success with like trying to block out like, oh, here's an hour of time where I'm going to work. Like, don't know why, just hasn't worked the best for me. However, using Google Calendar to at the bare minimum like write down when your classes are mm-hmm. and when you have like a meeting or an event that you have to go to and things like that. So you're not trying to juggle all of that in your head and you're like double scheduling things. That has been extremely nice to have.
Yeah. I use Google Calendar for scheduled stuff like work mm-hmm. hours, like work, mm-hmm. not the
school. As someone who misses things, even when they're in my Google Calendar, I would never go to anything if I didn't have it in yep. my Google Calendar.
So I use Google Calendar for when I have to be somewhere in some yep. sort of to-do list. It's just like a running thing of, hey, I have a major assignment. I should probably like start chipping away at that like a week in advance.
In high school, I used to just memorize everything I needed to do for the day. And I missed so many assignments. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you were saying, when you get to college, like all of that structure is completely out the window. And adding a little bit back in self-managed, you know, it's very essential to staying on top of things.
Mm-hmm. I love that structure not being defined, though.
It's pretty so nice. Yeah.
I can just go your own classes.
Yeah. You
know? At your own times, too.
Yeah. Your own times. Mm-hmm. It's addicting. I can't lie.
I just can't stop adding 8 a.m.s.
8 a.m.s are amazing, by the way.
We're recording this at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Just for you, dear listener.
It's 8:30.
Well, not my choice to have it at 8 a.m., but mm-hmm. Sacrifices must be made.
All right. Do we have anything else? Anyone else have any last minute things we want to bring up?
One thing. Take advantage of your college's... the programs, there's so many programs like mentoring programs and like programs that help specifically freshmen with that transition. Mm. Clemson has a lot of them. I think at least every college within Clemson has some version of one. Just take advantage of them, all the programs, see what sticks. Along with getting that mentoring, it'll help you connect more with the college that you're going to, like see it more than just a school, but like an opportunity that you're taking advantage of. I mean, you're already paying for it, so.
True. You are already paying for it.
I would definitely recommend just sort of stealing ideas from successful upperclassmen in terms of like what exactly they're doing, how they're going about college as a whole. Even internships, research experiences, and things like that are all super useful that, you know, upperclassmen are going to have more knowledge about, but may not necessarily know how to convey that to you as a freshman.
Upperclassmen love yapping about what they're doing. So absolutely. They're glad to tell you.
Well, I'm glad to provide another piece of advice and another strategy that you can steal. This kind of ties back to the previous idea of not letting perfect be the enemy of good. And you know, oh, I can study for 10 hours and get a 100, or I could study for 1 hour and get a 90. Mm-hmm. Something that I have personally done throughout my college career that has been really useful. I'll register for all my classes, right? I'll determine early on in the semester which one is going to be the most difficult. And I say, I will let myself get a B in that one. And that has been really, really, really useful, because that means that now I'm not fighting for a 90 plus in every single class. I'm fighting for a 90 plus in like all the other classes, but one I'm like fighting for an 80, and that like 10 point difference in itself,
it's big.
It's really big. Having one class where you just don't have
to think. It feels not real how mm-hmm. like each grade down you go, how many assignments you can just like skip or like fail completely. Like I'm always so shocked when I like do some grade calculations. I'm like, what if I get like 30s on everything left in the class? And it's like, oh, you get a 75. I'm like, what? What do you mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, like setting the floor for yourself and going for it, like realizing that you can't do everything, pretty essential.
Mm-hmm. I don't do that strategy, but I do something that's somewhat similar in that I know that like no matter like how well I pace myself, the work that I'm going to be doing at the very end of the semester is absolutely not going to be my best work. That's just like the nature of having like a tough course load and doing a lot of stuff and just like feeling somewhat burnt out by the end of it. And so what I do at the start of each semester is I know my, I get to know my syllabus inside and out. Mm-hmm. And then if I do well on the first couple of assignments, I can like, I'll know like that break point between like an A and a B and like how much I can realistically like take my foot off the gas. Like for instance, a couple of days ago, I was like, I have a final paper I have to write. I really don't want to write this final paper. I put it, I like plugged it all in. It's like, you need a 53% to keep your A.
Let's go.
Like, okay. And that was probably about the exact moment where, like, this semester, like, I stopped being here, like, mentally and started, like, being back home mentally.
Yep.
But knowing those points again of, like, where differing amounts of effort will yield the same result is, like, a good thing to, like, strategically calculate.
For sure. Your mental and physical health is at least equal to your schoolwork. Don't put schoolwork above those. So it's good to find that balance and not force yourself to strive for a bunch of hundreds, because that's just going to lead to, like, burnout and, like, negatively affect your schoolwork as a result.
One of the biggest things that you can do to prevent burnout is to sleep and eat.
Would you look at that?
If you'd believe it.
Yeah.
They're all interconnected.
They're all interconnected. Take care of yourselves, y'all. I do want to really quickly mention, though, that, you know, me and Nathan are seniors. We don't do this stuff that well either. Like, we've been through enough time in college to know what we should be doing and to have tried a lot of things that work. But it doesn't mean that we're smart enough to do it every time. Mm-hmm. We really should. But, you know, you're not perfect. Take the advice. Try your best to implement it. See what helps. See what doesn't. You know, you'll make it through, though.
Well said. And with that, I think we are going to sign off. This will most likely be Darren and I's last feature on the podcast, unless they choose to have us on as guest speakers, you know, in 10 years.
Christian shook his head. I think we're good.
So we appreciate y'all listening to us yap
for like three years.
Quite a while. Yeah. It's been a while. It's been good. Thank you for listening to our conversation. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you got something useful out of it. Feel free to share our podcast with any friends, family, anyone who's interested. Rate us 5 out of 5. And with that, I think we'll sign off. So we'll see you on the next episode of Seek Care in the Spotlight.
Bye, guys.
Bye.